The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Put your pencils down, because it's time for the Star Seminar. And now, here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Danny Fenton.
Welcome to another edition of the Star Seminar. It's nice to see that even though we're a couple weeks into the semester, you all have bright, shining faces. It looks like you've been getting enough sleep. I don't expect that to continue much longer, however. I am Professor Rabble Rouser, and with me, as always, Professor Emeritus, the great Danny Fenton. How are you today, sir?
I am doing great. You know, speaking of sleep, you know, it's for all you East Coasters, you're going to be up late Monday night because we got a Monday night football game. I'm super excited. I'm excited about us playing our division again because, I mean, obviously, you know, the Cowboys, they ran the gauntlet last year with the division, and here we go. We get to play some old friends, and it's just what the doctor ordered, because you know, the Cowboys, I think they've had a couple tough opponents, and I think they could use a break. And I think what better break is to have, you know, Daniel Jones and company show up. But you know, I started thinking about it. I was like, you know, I don't really like hate the Giants, and I started.
Yeah, me too.
I wanted to ask you, is who is your most hated NFC East rival?
Oh, it's definitely the Eagles. It's not even close. When I first became a Cowboy fan in the mid-70s and into the 80s with the Joe Gibbs teams, it was Washington, but it's not them anymore. It hasn't been for a long time because they've basically been a joke for 30 years. Ever since the Eagles became good again with Andy Reid, I've really hated them. And as you know, and in 2006, I moved to Philadelphia. I've been a Philadelphia resident ever since, and that has done nothing except deepen and intensify my dislike of the Eagles, and in particular of Eagles fans. So I will say that this is an interesting NFC East game because I've never, even when they were good, I've never particularly disliked the Giants. So I've never had that same kind of like burning hate for them that I have for the other two NFC East rivals. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. So there's a couple things that's weird about me is I don't have a favorite NFL player or a Cowboys player, and I don't have a least favorite team that I hate. It always kind of it moves, you know, depending on what's going on. And I say for the NFC East, it's really just about who's causing the most problems for the Cowboys at that point in time. And so for the better part of a couple of years, it's actually been the Eagles who have been the team that I hate the most out of that group, but it will change if one of these teams start to play well and they're the biggest competition for the Cowboys. Then I will find myself that's the team I despise the most. So you go back and like when I first started following football, you know, the Eagles were the first team to hate in a sense because the first NFC Championship I saw was the Eagles beat us, you know, and then we lost to the 49ers in the NFC Championship. And then it was Washington again after that. So, I mean, I got an early dose of not liking the NFC East, you know, real out of the gate. But the Giants have just been so, like, irrelevant lately to where it's, like, you know, just kind of, you know, you don't even really think about them too much. So I guess I just haven't had a lot of time to build up that that hatred towards them. So, yeah, I guess I don't have one. I guess it's Eagles because that's the team that's the causing the most problems right now. So, but anyway.
So let me ask you a question. So as you said earlier, we're getting ready to jump into, a Monday night game where we're all going to be staying up late on the East Coast to watch the Cowboys-Giants tilt. And Monday night games, primetime games always have a special place. And of course, the powers that be in the NFL offices love to put the Cowboys, the number one draw, on the field with New York Giants, number one market, on the field at the same time. So there have been a lot of Cowboys-Giants primetime games. It's a lot to choose from. It's a big list, but I'm going to ask you something. I want you to give me your favorite of all those big primetime Cowboys Giants games. Which one stands out to you as number one?
So we talk. We mentioned this to each other before the game, so we have an idea what to say. And usually, I like to have a couple just in case Rabs has the same thing. And I don't have two, so I'm banking on your old schoolness to kind of not. To not steal your answer, because mine's going to be recent, and I'm going back to the opener in the 2015 season. It was one of the only good things really about that and that season. I mean, we started 2-0. We beat Philly the following week, but of course Romo got hurt. But that opener, that was the come from behind win over the Giants. It was the Romo to Witten. 7 seconds left in the game. But I like it because for a couple of reasons, the Cowboys were down 10 in the fourth quarter and they came back and won, but it's especially satisfying because the Giants had that game won. If you might remember, they were going down, they were down up by three late in the game and they had it like third and one at the 1 yard line. And all they had to do, if they run it and get stopped, it's going to run out the clock. I mean, the clock's going to be, it's just less than a minute left in the game and the Cowboys going to have to score a touchdown. It's virtually impossible, but they chose they did like Eli threw an incomplete pass and just gave new life to the Cowboys. And then gave them like 90 seconds to score. They kicked the field goal, went up six, but then Romo marched down the field, and so it's especially satisfying because the Giants just, complete ineptitude. And just to throw the game away like that, they deserve to lose. So, to me, I mean, I think that's the one that I remember. So I would say, yeah, that is my favorite Giants primetime game. So, what about you, Rabs? That's a great one.
Yeah, and there was actually a couple plays on that drive earlier in that drive where Eli Manning didn't run the clock all the way down before he snapped the ball, and I think in total they lost like 30 seconds or something, or they failed to take 30 extra seconds off the clock, which would have made a difference in the game.
Big difference.
I also remember the way the Cowboys attacked. Like they didn't have a lot of timeouts, but they went ahead and attacked the middle of the field because Lance Dunbar was such a mismatch against their slow middle linebacker. And he had like two huge gains. And then they started attacking the perimeter, passed to Witten, another one to Terrence Williams. And then the game winner to Witten with hardly any time left. I remember my wife had gone to bed already. And so I had to be quiet. And I remember jumping up and down and without saying anything, like saying F yeah, but like not saying anything, in my living room. And that was a great game. The one that sticks out to me, and you're right, it's a little old school, but although not really, really old school, was in Bill Parcells' first year. They had a Monday night game against the Giants, his return to the Meadowlands, and Quincy Carter and crew jumped out to a big lead. The Giants came back. And then there was that incredible sequence where the Giants like kicked off one of the Cowboys. I don't even remember who it was at this point. Very smartly let the ball roll out of bounds, so they got the ball at the 40, and Quincy Carter was able to hit a receiver downfield. Was it Antonio Bryant maybe downfield and get them in field goal range to tie the game with no time left, and then they had a nice little drive to win it in overtime, and it was such a sort of shocking thing because the Giants had been so good. And, of course, Bill Parcells returned to the Meadowlands. It had a kind of fairy tale storybook quality to it that was pretty great. But it was also just a really, really great game where, we didn't have any idea that the Cowboys were going to be any good at all that year. We assumed they would be awful because they were coming off 3-5-11 seasons. And so it was just like an incredible upset at the time. And then later on, we realized that Cowboys were probably a better team than Giants. And anyway, that was one of them. There's a bunch of them. There's one where Dion had like three interception return and maybe a kickoff return and a punt return or some ridiculous sort of combination. He ended up sort of single-handedly beating the Giants on Monday night. There was a season opener in 1995 where Emmitt Smith ripped off a 60-yard touchdown on the first play of the season. There's been a lot of memorable Giants Cowboys tilts. I tell you what, to talk more about Cowboys Giants history, let's bring our good friend Kunal Shah. He's a historian of the NFL and a Giants fan. And, we'll talk a little bit about Giants Cowboys past and the Giants Cowboys future. All right, students, put your cell phones away and listen up because we have a treat for you here today. Guest lecturer for today is none other than the OG of the NYG, the great former writer for Big Blue View and an old friend of ours from way, way back in the early SB Nation days, the great Kunal Shah, also known as K6y on Twitter. Kunal, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. I'm excited for Giants Cowboys. I really couldn't have said it, with a lot of genuine feeling in years past, but with our 2-0 Giants, and no Dak, maybe a little bit of excitement starting to creep in. So thank you so much for having me. Like Sean said, we go a way, way back. I used to be Invictus XI for Big Blue View. I was one of their head writers for a few years from 2010 to 2016, 2017, before life got in the way. But, friends stay friends. And, Absolutely. We've been riffing back and forth on Twitter. So it's been fun.
Yeah, we've had, we run the whole gamut, right? So we started probably having arguments about Brandon Jacobs and finished by having arguments about Eli Manning. And so, we may not argue, but we're gonna be talking about this generation of New York Football Giants. So the first question I have for you is obviously the big development there, at least from our perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong in that, is that they have a new head coach. So, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the Giants' new coaching staff, and in particular on their new head coach. What are your thoughts about that, and what's different about the team as a result?
Yeah, so Brian Daboll is saying all the right things and doing all the right things right now, at this point last year, or 2 years ago, I should say, Joe Judge was saying all the right things and in many eyes was doing all the right things as well. So I really am kind of approaching this with a very tempered enthusiasm. But you already start to see some differences between the two. You have this juxtaposition where Joe Judge will run victory formation in the first quarter, with the Giants down 7 and sort of just suck the life out of the team towards the end of his tenure. And then you sort of juxtapose that with Brian Daboll, week one against the number one seed in the AFC, the Tennessee Titans, going for two and going for the win when, they came back and the score was 20-19 and they ended up converting and winning the game. And so just showing faith in the team and just having, a more relaxed and sort of team-friendly atmosphere right now has been doing wonders. And so, everybody's riding high on Brian Daboll, but that's what winning does. We have to wait and see, adversity. Everybody reacts to adversity differently, and we haven't had that much adversity yet in this very young season. So, jury's out, but so far, so good.
Well, let's hope Micah Parsons can offer just a little adversity. It'll be a growing opportunity for you guys. So actually, I'll tell you what, as an outsider, I'd love to hear an outsider to us as Cowboy fans. I'd love to hear your take on this. How would you rank the various NFC East head coaches? And then, of course, where does Brian Daboll fall? And is he already the best head coach in the NFC East?
Well, I can definitely tell you no. You know, he may be the best head coach in the NFC East. But I think it's too early to say that. I don't think I have the most flattering vision of Mike McCarthy. I don't think Mike McCarthy is really anywhere near the top of the NFC East. I think, you know, there's probably a very large contingent of Cowboy fans that would agree with me. And I suspect there's a lot of anticipation and sort of tracking on what Sean Payton's thoughts are about Mike McCarthy. So that kind of leaves us with Nick Sirianni, which, you know, and anytime I have to praise the Eagles, it just leaves a bad taste in my mouth. And Ron Rivera. And I'd say by default, just based on prior experience, I'd probably go with Ron Rivera as the best coach in the NFC East.
Wow.
You know, I think the Commanders have had a lot of adversity coming from their, you know, owner mostly. And I think he's doing a lot with the talent that he has. And he brings sort of maturity to, you know, kind of an immature team. Nick Sirianni, listen, if he takes the Eagles to, you know, the promised land, obviously he's going to be the obvious choice. But I still think it's too early for him, just as it's too early for Brian Daboll. And then Mike McCarthy is somewhere in there too. So I think you have two incompletes in the NFC East. I think you have an established head coach in Ron Rivera, and you have an established head coach in Mike McCarthy, where, you know, there have been some mistakes. And I think you'd agree with me, you know, as far as McCarthy goes. So we'll see how it shakes out. But I'm definitely, you know, I'm not going to be somebody who's, you know, beating his chest and saying, you know, Brian Daboll is the best. He's got to earn it. You know, and the Giants fans have been suffering for a long time. So you know, we're starved for something good, but he's got to earn it.
Yeah, I actually think you hit it right on the head. I agree with everything there. Yeah, I think the two younger coaches definitely are incompletes, and you never know because they could go either direction. Rivera to me is the obvious. I don't think there's much debating about it. I know some people don't care for him that much, but of the choices, I really think you got to go out. I would rank McCarthy third. And the only reason I say third is because I figure between Sirianni and the Giants coach, one of them will be better. One of them will be worse. I just kind of figure maybe I'm just playing the odds. I'm not going to put McCarthy dead last, even though if it was me, I probably would. But I mean, I'm trying to be objective and just, so that's how I would stack them. Rabs, do you have a different thought about any of this?
It's funny because I sort of in thinking about this, as we created the question, I was, I think I just dismissed Rivera. And so both of your arguments are really interesting and persuasive. And I think I dismissed him just because I dismissed that organization in general. And some of the reasons you began to talk about when you're talking about the train wreck that is their ownership. I've always been a fan of Ron Rivera. He went to my alma mater and I thought he was a really interesting player, you know, when he was playing for the Chicago Bears way back in the day. And I respect him a lot as a man. And yes, I mean, he's had a heck of a lot of adversity, and I wouldn't wish that position on anybody working with that front office. Oh my God, that must be really, really challenging. The amount of stuff that you probably are privy to that you simply can't talk about because it's too indemnifying. It's probably, you know, four or five little juicy tidbits a day. So that's all a way of saying, I actually don't think it's too, I don't know. I don't know that it's too early to have some reasonable opinion. And I think I would probably put, I don't know. I have a feeling right now that both Sirianni and Dable are better coaches than McCarthy. And I think they might both be better coaches than Rivera.
They could be. You know, one other point too, and you kind of mentioned the ownership too. And I want to say with Sirianni is, and I feel this is also true with Doug Peterson, is like, I feel like the ownership, they're just so, you know, it's, they take a lot of risk and they make a lot of big moves. And I think that sometimes the coaches just get caught up in it and they're applauded when they work. Cause we remember we thought Peterson was fantastic. I mean, Cowboy fans, you know, they were talking about, you know, Peterson and stuff when they hated Garrett. But then at the same time too, when those moves come crashing down, then obviously they got the worst coach in there. So I don't, it may be kind of tricky to properly evaluate Sirianni or any Eagles coach because of how Howie Roseman works and just all the things that the Eagles do, because they're just, you know, they're constantly making radical changes to their team. So that makes it hard. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not, that's why I'm not going to give Sirianni like a lot of credit if things are going well, but at the same time, I'll be open to the idea that maybe he deserves it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, to your point, right. You know, expectations, you know, play a huge role in when we're talking about these coaches. Right. So I think the expectations for Nick Sirianni and Mike McCarthy are, I'd say, higher than they are for Ron Rivera and Brian Daboll. I don't know. Like, would you guys agree with that? I think both teams have enough talent and have made moves. Eagles more so, I think, than the Cowboys this past offseason that signify, hey, you know, we need to make the playoffs. We need to win. You know, I know Jerry Jones puts a lot of that pressure on the coaching staff for sure. But, you know, you just look at the moves that the Eagles made, you know, trading a first for you know, AJ Brown, you know, really sort of going all in on the offseason, you know, bringing in, you know, some big name additions, Jordan Davis, you know, Haishon Reddick, you know, and James Bradbury, training for CJ Gardner-Johnson, you know, they've made some high profile moves, right? And I get the sense that they're really trying to gear up for a deep playoff run. And so you have to, you know, if they don't make the playoffs, but they end up with a better record, you know, than say the Giants or, you know, the Commanders, and they miss the wild card or something, which I don't think is going to happen. But, you know, that's a big failure, you know, from Nick Sirianni's part. Whereas with Brian Daboll, I don't think anybody's really giving the Giants a chance. I think I can safely say that. And so if the Giants, you know, do have a winning record, right, you know, a 9-8 record, people are going to say, holy crap, you know, Dable's, you know, really good coach. And so expectations, I think, play a big role in how we rank this.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why McCarthy's going to get fired after the end of this season.
Yeah.
It's because their expectations are that the Cowboys need to be going up. And, you know, when they don't, then – you know, he's going to be held accountable. So, but one thing I wanted to talk about. So, I mean, I look at the Giants and usually, I mean, in the past, they've kind of like been, I've made jokes about them just being dreadful at drafting and just basically using free agency to kind of fill the voids and make up the difference, because they have had some bad drafting, but they had two really early draft picks this year. Actually, it's strangely enough, and this is, I'm not just saying this because it's the Giants, the guys they picked, Kayvon Thibodeau, you know, fifth overall, and Evan Neal, seventh overall, you know, two really great players, you know, and you know, as far as, you know, how they were stacked in the draft, they were a little lower on my board. So I wasn't disappointed when they picked those players, because those are like the players I could see maybe not living up to the expectations. But I wanted to get your thoughts on what is your initial impression on those two early draft picks for the Giants?
Yeah, that's a good question. So let's start with Kayvon Thibodeau. So he was the fifth overall pick. I feel a little disappointed, and not because of, you know, his play or anything like that, but just because he hasn't played. You know, I want to see the guy play. He got injured in the second preseason game against the Bengals, I believe. Because I think Thaddeus Moss, you know, threw kind of a low block. And there was some debate on Twitter about whether or not this type of block should be outlawed, but legal block. But he suffered a knee injury from that. And the Giants have been pretty mum on his availability. They listed him as doubtful for the week one opener against Carolina, and they're just calling him day to day. And so we haven't really had a chance to see a whole lot of Kayvon Thibodeau, aside from, you know, maybe a handful of reps in the first preseason game. During training camp, he was ripping dudes. You know, he was winning a lot of one-on-ones. He, you know, in my mind, looked like he was on his way to justifying, you know, being the fifth overall pick. But we won't know. And I have a feeling that if he does play against the Cowboys on Monday night, he's going to be limited. And I don't know that we can take away anything from the snaps that he does get, because he's been put on ice for the last few weeks. So disappointment, because I just, you know, he's your top draft pick. You know, the Cowboys have Micah Parsons. The Commanders drafted Chase Young a couple of years ago. You know, you have these alpha edge rushers, and you feel like the Giants got an alpha edge rusher of their own, and you just want to see it. So, kind of again incomplete with Thibodeau. Moving on to Neal, the second first round draft pick, seventh overall. The initial impression has been overall a positive one. He's played every snap. Unlike Thibodeau, he's been able to play every snap. The first game was a little rough, you know, and he gave up some pressures. And you know, one of these things that you know, what really kind of frustrates me, you know, about just football in general is, you know, people look at Tristan Wirfs and they look at Rashawn Slater and think that, you know, if you're a rookie going on an offensive line, you need to produce right away. And if you're a high draft pick, you're a bust after a few games. Evan Neal has had some detractors within, you know, Giants, you know, universe, because he struggled. And the reason for him struggling actually is his, our offensive line coach, Bobby Johnson, you know, really does put an emphasis on shorter, quicker pass sets, which he didn't really do at Alabama. He had these nice, long, vertical pass sets. His biggest issue in college was balance, and sort of having these big, long strides and these vertical pass sets really helped with that. Whereas, you know, there's no hiding, and you know, with quicker defenders, if you don't get there, if you don't meet your mark quick enough, those balance issues will show up, and they've been showing up. And so it's been positive because he improved a significant amount from game one to game two, but you know, he's got some work to do. He's got some work to do. I know you guys have, you know, a rookie starting tackle of your own in Tyler Smith. And, you know, from what I remember watching him versus Bengals, I think he did pretty well. Really well. And so, you know, these rookies will have ups and downs, and you just kind of got to ride through. And so I wanted to sort of add to this, you know, I know we're talking about initial impressions, but one of the big matchups that I'll be looking for in this game is Evan Neal against Micah Parsons, which, you know, is not a great matchup for us. And not, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing it, but also not looking forward to seeing it. On the other side of the Giants line, you have Andrew Thomas, who I think has, you know, been playing at an all-pro caliber level, and is one of the best offensive tackles in the game, right or left tackle. And I don't think that the Cowboys are going to put Micah Parsons on. Now, that is something where I think would be a phenomenal matchup, just because it's, you know, best on best. But I think, you know, the Cowboys, you know, if they were smart, they would line up Micah Parsons, who obviously has, you know, kind of this absurd speed to power, and put him on Evan Neal and catch Evan Neal off balance. So what I'm going to say to Cowboys fans who are interested in sort of tracking how Evan Neal does with Tyler Smith, don't take Monday night as an indictment on Evan Neal, please. Micah Parsons kills most offensive linemen, as I'm sure you know. And, you know, having him on a rookie is probably going to be bad. But overall, you know, kind of a long-winded way of saying, I think he's going to be a good one, but he's got some looks.
Yeah. Sometimes they take time. And I've been trying to tell Rabs, you know, with Tyler Smith, just give the guy time. Give him time. You know, but yeah, it's no, none of that's true. I've been real hard on Tyler Smith, and clearly I am mistaken. But one thing too, you know, I am surprised with the Andrew Thomas pick. I mean, because I felt like we knew that the Giants were going to take offensive line, but I thought you guys were going to get Tristan Wirfs. I thought, and he was like one of my top ranked players in the draft. And I'm thinking, oh man, I do not want to be going against him for the next decade and a half and stuff. But then you guys surprised us with To me, at the time, I'm like, that seems like a little bit of a reach. But now you know you're actually starting to see, and he's been playing really well. And so I'm starting to kind of backtrack on my feelings about Andrew Thomas too. So yeah, I feel like you got one good tackle, and with Evan Neal, it's like you know it's a kind of a wait and see. But yeah, right, he does got a really tough test ahead of him with Micah, because I mean, tell you what, even the most sturdy of tackles have balance issues when they're trying to, you know, deal with him. So yeah, that definitely would be fun to watch.
You know, one of the things you were just talking about was initial impressions and how we have to, it's the NFL is such a strange league because there are so few games and careers are so short. And we have to form impressions about things in with such a comparatively small sample size than you would if you were following a baseball team or something, you know, where you can get 150 at bats before you can actually, you know, you can begin to form an impression of somebody. And here you don't have nearly as many plays to evaluate, et cetera, many opportunities to evaluate. And so that seems to be, you know, in many ways, the sort of theme of this conversation is we were talking about some young players. We can't get overly excited and we can't get overly disappointed by them. And I think it also applies to the season. Like one of the things that Dan and I have been talking about a lot lately is that the way the NFL is constructed now, September is essentially the preseason, right? Yeah. And because no one's playing games in preseason. So the preseason games are essentially training camp scrimmages. And then now we're really in preseason football. So we're not going to know anything about teams because they haven't played together. You know, we could say that the Eagles looked really good last week, but I don't know that it means anything. It's a preseason game.
Right.
So that's all a way of saying, let's tap the brakes on you know, like, as you've been rightly cautioning on evaluating some of these youngsters too quickly. It takes many people 2 or 3 years, which is the strange thing about the NFL. If you're not a first round draft pick, it takes you 3 years. You have basically 1 year and then some, and maybe a little bit more with your team. And it's, man, I mean, I do not envy people in NFL front offices because you're spending so much time evaluating guys and you may only have them for a year before you can't afford them any longer.
100%.
At any rate, with this theme of like tapping the brakes and not over-evaluating, I don't want to put too much or too little into it, but what do you make of the Giants 2-0 start? Is it meaningful at all? Is it, you know, we talked earlier about the Brian Daboll, you know, administration and the beginning of his coaching tenure with the team. Is this an indication of a turnaround, or is it just kind of the fact that the NFL is really a luck-driven, parity-driven league, and it's a small sample size? What do you make of the Giants 2-0 start?
So, you know, former Cowboys coach and New York Giants legend Bill Parcells had this one quote: "You are what your record says you are."
But are you?
That's how I choose to look at it. And you know, the NFL is, you know, and you guys know this also well, a game of inches, right? It's a game of seconds, you know, And so you look at the Giants two games, probably against bad teams, right? I think Tennessee's probably not a great team this year. They were great last year, probably not so great this year. Carolina's a mess. But And you look at it and you say the Giants won 21-20, but Tennessee missed a makeable field goal. And that's why the Giants won. And then Carolina, the Giants won on a Graham Gano 56-yard field goal, 1960. But I'll take you back to last year. And the Giants' first nine games, they were 3-6. And so, you know, you had, you know, sort of the view of the Giants as this 3-6 team that was terrible. Within those nine games, one versus the Washington football team, they lost because Dexter Lawrence was called for an offside and on the game-ending field goal, in which that field goal was missed and then subsequently after five errors was made. And the Giants lost by a point. And it was then found at the end of the, I think the referee Twitter, the Football Zebras Twitter account, the referee, NFL referee Twitter account, said after the game that Dexter Lawrence actually wasn't offsides. Then there was a game against the Atlanta Falcons where the Giants lost 17-14. And that was on a very long Younghoe Koo field goal in which there was a questionable penalty which got the Atlanta Falcons in the field goal position at the end of the game. Otherwise, it would have gone into overtime. And then the third game that I wanted to talk about was the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, one of the kings of the AFC, the Giants lost 20-17. They held the Chiefs to 20 points. And again, there were some questionable penalties, as there are in every game. But, you know, that's the thing, right? And the Giants, over the past few years, have lost these types of games, have always lost these types of games. There was one game 2 years ago, a game that I went to at Lincoln Financial Field, where the Giants lost on a 63-yard field goal by Jake Elliott. That was the worst subway ride home in Philadelphia that I've ever experienced. But, you know, the point stands. They used to lose these types of games. They couldn't close these games out. Call it luck, whatever it is. Well, now the Giants are winning these games. And again, you know, luck, you know, I believe in luck, but I believe that over time, you know, good luck and bad luck sort of even out, right? And so if you ask me how legit this 2-0 start is, it's just as legit as the Eagles 2-0 start until it isn't, you know, and it's because football is crazy. Football is, you know, a game of inches, a game of seconds, and that's why we love it. That's why we watch, even though sometimes our teams are bad, because anything can happen. And so that's my sort of answer to that.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries, not including...
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
A reasonable answer.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, that's how I'd answer it too. But I'd give the Rabs, if my team was 0-2, I'd give the Rabs. It's just preseason answer. And if they're 2-0, yeah, I'm going to Parcells quote. And
yeah.
So, so, you know, speaking of 2-0, the Cowboys backup quarterback, Cooper Rush, is he's 2-0 as a starter. So
there you go.
So I want you to tell me what you think the Giants are going to do to slow down this phenomenal quarterback.
The juggernaut. The juggernaut.
So I will say, you know, probably the most impactful coach on the Giants, I would say right now is maybe not even Brian Daboll. It's probably Wink Martindale, their defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Completely different style, ultra aggressive. You know, he's the guy who's known to blitz the highest percentage of time out of any other defensive coordinator in the NFL. And it's worked. It really has worked, and it's really energized the Giants defense. And I think if you have, you know, a more inexperienced quarterback, they're going to be more prone to errors when they're under pressure. And you can bet that Wink Martindale is going to be blitzing more in this game than he has the first two games, guaranteed. And what the Giants do, and what the Giants have been doing really well, is they've been using their two safeties. So their two safeties are Xavier McKinney and Julian Love. Xavier McKinney, I call a budding star. Julian Love, I call a pretty solid starter caliber player. And he's been moving them everywhere. You know, up at the line of scrimmage and using them interchangeably. And what that does is it allows him a lot of flexibility. You know, he has these zone blitzes where he'll have, you know, the defensive tackles, back in the coverage. You have these amoeba formations, things like that. Pretty complicated defense. And I think, you know, that's, if the Giants are going to win, it's going to be on the back of their defense. They actually, you know, fun fact, they lead the league in third down defense and third down conversion. Their third down conversion rate is sub 25%, which is, you know, pretty significant. And it tells me that it's not a fluke, you know? And so it'll be the Giants defense that potentially stops Cooper Rush. Unfortunately, the defense has a lot of injuries. You know, we talked about Kayvon Thibodeau. Their other edge rusher, Azeez Ojulari, who set the franchise record for rookie sacks with 8.5 last year, and we have really high hopes for, also has been out for the last 2 weeks. So we've been playing our edge 3 and edge 4 for both games, and both players, I haven't really heard anything as far as their availability for Monday night. Leonard Williams, maybe our best player on the defense, is out with an injury. And then our second, our CB2, Aaron Robinson, ended up having appendicitis. And so needed an appendectomy. So he was out for Carolina, and his status is in question. So we have a lot of injuries on the defensive side. But, you know, Wink's going to try and mask that as best he can by just bringing the heat. So Wink's going to be the X factor for the Giants for sure, and how he calls the game.
Interesting. Okay, thanks for that info. I want to now sort of flip the field and talk about the Giants offense and the Cowboys defense. Yeah. But before I do, we were talking earlier about Micah Parsons, and I want to ask you kind of sort of lead-in question here, because you're positioned as well as anybody I know to answer this question, and that is that we're seeing lots of comparisons of Micah Parsons to Lawrence Taylor. Please tell people why that's not a reasonable comparison.
It's not reasonable in any you know, sort of sense of the word. I think, and let me just say this. Okay, I'm not saying this as a Giants fan. I'm saying this as a fan of NFL history. And let me also say that I think that Micah Parsons is probably the most talented pass rusher in the NFL. And if he was a full-time pass rusher, He has as good a chance as any as breaking Michael Strahan's single season sack record. So I say this with the utmost respect for Michael Parsons and the skill set. But, I mean, come on, it's his second year in the league. You know, Lawrence Taylor is somebody who dominated for close to a decade, who literally changed the linebacker position. You know,
And the way we think about offensive line.
And the way that we think of the offensive line. There was a paradigm shift in the way that teams game plan because of Lawrence Taylor. Mm-hmm. Nobody in the NFL has come close to that, with the exception of maybe Aaron Donald in the way that, you know, teams view these undersized three techniques. But I think Aaron Donald is the reason why these guards are now getting $20 million a year. You know, I think that's the result of Aaron Donald. But apart from that, you know, Michael Parsons has a chance to be a very, very, very devastating player, Hall of Fame player. And, you know, I'm one to say historically, like, you know, records and legacies are meant to be broken. You know, there will be a player at some point that comes along and, you know, dethrones Lawrence Taylor as the greatest defensive player of all time. And that's fine. I'm not angry at that. And it very well could be Michael Parsons. But I mean, it's week three of his second year in the league. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a long way to go. And you know, that's kind of all I have to say about that. I think it's really funny when people say that. And half the time, I think people are trolling. But
I agree. I agree. And I think that people are doing that because they've either forgotten or they never got a chance to see Lawrence Taylor play. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, even if numbers aside, play style, I don't think from a kind of play style perspective, they're really comparable. Lawrence Taylor's arguably the most violent player on defense in NFL history. You know, I mean, and just, he was disruptive. Yes. But he was just abusive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Michael Parsons, that's not his style. He's much more like Derek Thomas or something like that. I mean, he's got incredible athleticism. His, he can change directions and cut on a dime without losing speed or acceleration. Smooth. Yeah. Incredibly smooth. But from you know, he's a pass rushing linebacker, but we can't just say every pass rushing linebacker who's good is Lawrence Taylor, you know? And so, this is one of those things that bothers me. And you know, I love Micah Parsons. I'm obviously a fervent Cowboy fan. I want him to be great. And I want him to do all the things you just talked about, which is to rewrite the record books and, you know, all that. But I just think that, what those comparisons mean to me is that people are forgetting who Lawrence Taylor was.
Yeah.
So as I said, I wanted that to be a sort of like, you know, a little appetizer for the real discussion of the Cowboys defense against the Giants offense. So obviously Brian Daboll came in big time offensive coordinator in his resume. You know, what's he going to do? How is his offense? What's his strategy for attacking the Cowboys defense, which is, I think, without argument, the strongest of the three units on the Cowboys right now.
But before you get to that, I just wanted to interject a little bit here, because first off, with the whole LT Micah comparison, I don't disagree with anything that you guys said. I mean, obviously, you know, you're absolutely right. It's way too early to be making comparisons, and I'll channel my inner Jason Garrett and say, you know, I'm not real big on comparisons, but I wanted to say that I understand it a little bit in the sense of there's one reason. It's to me, Lawrence Taylor was almost like just a unique player in the sense of, you know, just edge rushers really didn't look like that in any, you know, and he did just completely wreck things. And while I totally agree with Rabs, is the playing styles are different, but Micah Parsons is also a very unique type of player, because, you know, you don't have edge rushers that can run that fast and, you know, or even, you know, or that have that type of build. So I think in that regard, while they're different, but they're both unique. And certainly, like, if Micah did come along and was, you know, just the next big thing, we could look back and point to what we've seen so far and say, well, it was right in front of us, because the guy has just been phenomenal. And he's starting off this year, like, right where he left off. So I mean, I get it. It's silly to compare, you know, a guy, a Hall of Fame player, to a player that's played 16. So I don't know, you know, but it's, I also get it too, because they're both just very unique players. They're just not your typical type of player. So that's it. I just wanted to throw that in there for all the Cowboy fans out there that are like, hey, what are you talking about? You know, Micah and
Elton. That's totally fair.
This brings to mind another Parcells quote, which is one of my favorites, which is, don't break out the anointing oil just yet, fellas.
Enough with the Parcells quote.
it's one of the things we have in common here. So anyway, back to my question about Brian Daboll's offense and what they're going to try to do to, against what is a pretty feisty Cowboys defense, who got 6 sacks last week against Joe Burrow. I think people are thinking that they're going to eat against the Giants offensive line. What's he going to do to slow them down and generate some offense?
I think if the Giants are going to succeed, they need to establish the run with Saquon Barkley, who currently leads the league in rushing yards. He's having a very, very good year. He's Saquon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He looks like Saquon. And, you know, if you fall behind early and abandon the run, that's when, you know, you have DeMarcus Lawrence and Michael Parsons painting their ears back. But if you can hold them off, it'll open up play action. And, you know, Brian Daboll, he has this sort of pseudo system with Mike Kafka, who's coming over from the Andy Reid tree. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, some highlights of both of these guys are mobile quarterbacks that can make, you know, plays with their feet. Daniel Jones has actually run for about 4 or 5 first downs, including several fourth downs. And so you're going to see a lot of Daniel Jones, you know, running. A lot of times it'll be running for his life, but there'll be some design runs as well. And establishing the run with Saquon Barkley. I think, you know, one of the things I will say about the Cowboys, and this has been historically consistent, and obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but this is just how I see it, is, you know, the Cowboys aren't really big fans of these big hulking one techs and noses, and they put in these small little three techs like Tristan Hill, and so I do think that, you know, while the Cowboys have been pretty decent against the run this year, I think that is an opportunity for the Giants to exploit. You know, the Giants run mostly a gap run scheme, you know, man on man, and they can get some movement there. They may not be, you know, the best pass protectors, but they can get some movement in the run game, and they can get downfield. You know, Joshua Zudu, our third round pick, and Evan Neal are both, and Andrew Thomas are all pretty athletic, and they can, and they've been getting downfield, and helping Saquon break off these big runs. So that's the way that I think Dable's going to attack this Cowboys defense. Apart from that, you know, expect a lot of horizontal routes and a lot of quick throws, a lot of checkdowns, to sort of, again, neutralize his pass rush. I would expect Micah Parsons to come out early as a pass rusher and transition more to maybe more of an off-ball backer because of this, because I think the Giants are acutely aware of who Micah Parsons is and you know, the best way to neutralize a pass rushing, aside from establishing run, is getting these quick throws off. They invested heavily in these yards after catch players. So Kadarius Toney, who had a very big game against the Cowboys last year. They drafted Wandale Robinson, who's kind of a Kadarius Toney light. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he's also injured. You know, pretty much our entire draft class is injured. So he's also injured and doesn't look like he's going to play. But the Giants have a lot of these smaller wide receivers like Sterling Shepard. They have Kenny Golladay, but they haven't really used him. He only had 2 snaps last week, and he's looking like a huge free agent bust for us. But that's the expectation as far as the game plan. You know, I think they're going to be very, very scared of the Cowboys run game or, you know, pass rush. And, you know, they're probably going to try and avoid Trayvon Diggs as much as they can as well. So I wouldn't expect too many deep shots, you know, short passing game and a lot of Saquon Barkley.
The good news is that with the Cowboys offense, they're not likely to fall behind, so they can probably stick to that plan longer into the game. Because even if it's not successful, right? Like even if it's not working, it's unlikely the Cowboys are going to be able to generate enough explosives to open up a big lead. So we have one more question for you, Dan.
Yeah. So actually, you know what? You've given me a lot to think about here, and I've actually changed my mind a couple times on this when I'm trying to predict this outcome. But so why don't you tell us, what do you think? Who's going to win this game, and give us the final score prediction?
I'm hoping that not a lot of Giants fans watch this, especially Giants fans that I know, but I'm actually going to predict a 19-17 win for the Cowboys. I think that, you know, our offense right now has a lot of problems. And while I think our defense is incredibly strong and incredibly inspired, by Wink Martindale, I think, you know, potentially not having our number one or number two edge rusher, not having the best player on the defense in Leonard Williams, and potentially not having our second cornerback, you know, there comes a point where, you know, the losses build up, you know, to a degree where you can't really overcome it. And you know, as much as, you know, we want to sort of clown on Cooper Rush, or at least as much as I want to clown on Cooper Rush, you know, as being not Dak, you know, you guys still have Tony Pollard and Ezekiel Elliott. You still have CeeDee Lamb. You know, you still have a tight end, which, you know, the Giants really don't have any linebackers. Although we did sign Jalen Smith earlier this week.
As you said, but the Giants don't really have any linebackers.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if that moves the needle at all for you guys, but we don't really have any linebackers. And so if you have, a breathing tight end, living, breathing tight end, that's going to be a mismatch for you. And so I think that the Giants will be good enough to not allow 20 points, but I don't think the offense is going to be able to really kind of move the ball. And, you know, they're averaging around 17 points. So I'm not saying anything, you know, blasphemous to my fellow Giants fans. So as angry and as upset that you know, this outcome would sort of make me, I think that the Cowboys sneak away with this one. And you have history on your side as well. You know, we haven't beaten you in like 7 out of the last 8 attempts or something ridiculous like that. So, obviously, I hope I'm wrong.
I mean, if the Cowboys can get 19 points, I'm going to be quite happy.
That's how I feel about the Giants getting 17 points. So,
yeah, I mean, as we've been talking about this game, you know, the more I'm looking at this as two offenses that are overmatched by defenses that have a talent advantage, a schematic advantage, a confidence advantage. And, you know, when we got on the podcast a couple of weeks ago with someone who covers the Buccaneers, we asked for final scores, and I said something like 13-9, you know, and I had sort of joked in another podcast that it was going to be 9-6, just because I think that there's going to be a lot of those scores.
Yeah.
To me, that it could be a really interesting game, because it's going to be one of those games where every goofy play is going to matter so much more. You know, when you have a 41-37 game and there's a fumble, that doesn't really matter. 100%. You're going to make it up. I mean, if someone can crank out a 20-yard punt returner, or Saquon Barkley can break a tackle and get to the second level, that's going to change the game, because I think the way the game's going to be played, it's going to be one of those things where you try to score by gaining 10 yards over you know, per possession over a course of several possessions, you know? So I think that to me, that could be a really interesting game, but I think I still think it's going to be something like, I don't know, I'll say 16-13, you know, which means of course it's going to be 37-34, right?
Of course.
I'll say 16-13 Cowboys, only because they're playing at home. Oh, no, they're playing on the road. So I'll say 16, 13 Giants because they're playing.
You're taking the Giants? Oh, my goodness. You know, first off, it should be noted that we have not picked the Cowboys to win yet. So we have put aside our, you know, our bias to make, you know, educated guesses on this game. And Rab's apparently just still going against the Cowboys. But I am not this week. However, I will say I agree with everything you guys have said. And I think this is going to be kind of a sloppy game. And I think this is going to be one that people are going to be like saying, really, this is what we have to watch on Monday night. Cause I think, you know, and you got me thinking about, you know, with the defense and the pressure, they're going to come after Cooper, and it's going to get ugly. And the Giants and Cowboys defense they're going to wreak havoc too. So I think we're going to see some turnovers, you know, more so in this game than what we've seen in our first couple weeks. I just think the offense is going to look really bad at times. It's going to be sloppy. I actually, you know, I'm just going to stick with the true primetime Cowboys Giants as of late. I'm going to say that this is going to go into overtime and it's going to come down. I'm going to go 23-20 and I'm going to have Brett Maher be the hero once again for the Cowboys. But it's going to be an ugly 23-20 game. So, and I think that, like, also with Barkley too, I think the Cowboys are going to hold him to like 3 yards per carry until they don't. And then he'll break one and then it'll be, you know, 7 yards carry. But so, I mean,
you know, it's one thing for a Giants-Cowboys game to go into overtime, you know, in a 1 p.m. slot or a 12 p.m. slot for you guys, if you guys are in Texas. But to have it go into overtime and then the Giants lose on Monday night and then having to wake up early for work on Tuesday is really going to hurt. It's really going to hurt. So that's probably the worst case scenario for me.
Sorry. But...
What's going to make it really bad is that they're going to get to 20 each by the end of regulation by each collecting 10 safeties.
Yeah.
No, I
mean, that's as good a prediction as any for this type of game.
Right. I think the Giants are going to probably be leading for a large part of this game. I just expect that to kind of happen. And I think the Cowboys, they get it together late and tie it, and then they come away and win it in OT. So that's fingers crossed.
Well, listen, we got to wrap up. Thanks so much for coming on with us and you know, sharing everything about the Giants and their, you know, their new coaching staff and, you know, the New York 2-0 NFC East leading Giants. It was great talking to you. Best of luck to you both this week and the rest of the season, my friend.
Hey, same to you guys. The pleasure was all mine. I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you. It was nice talking to you.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I love talking to Kunal about the Giants. It's a shame that he doesn't write anymore because he used to write some really great stuff. But he's a great follow on Twitter. If you don't follow him, he's at KSIXI on Twitter.
One thing I really like people that are actually, I mean, it's good to be passionate about your team, but I like people that actually are very, you know, they're reasonable, they're objective, they kind of take a step back, and you know, you can kind of. And, you know, you just felt like you're getting a very honest assessment. So I really appreciate that, joining us.
Yeah, he's managed to find that sort of delicate equipoise between caring about the team, but not letting it, like, ruin his life. I mean, I think there's a lot of fans who are just like, it's too important to them. And so when the Cowboys aren't good, they get really disgruntled. And he's got a really good, full life, and he loves his team. But, you know, if they don't do well, they don't do well. He's not going to. He's not going to get all upset about it.
I wish I had better equipoise. You know, I just.
we're all on a journey, Dan. We're all on a journey. Speaking of journeys, a couple things I want to talk about before we wrap up. And the first is this. If you remember last year, the Cowboys opened the season with a loss against the Buccaneers and then beat a very good AFC team by a field goal late in the game. And then came home and beat the pants off the Eagles, an NFC East opponent, and that sort of got them on the early season run. So one of the interesting things about this year so far is it sort of reflected that same history. And I feel like, just like last year, that it was like a Monday night game, big primetime game against the Eagles. Here we have another big primetime game, and it feels like the season could swing in either direction. And you know, they sort of showed everybody that they were clearly a better team than the Eagles in a game they won by 20, and frankly wasn't as close as the final score. But the season could have gone either direction. There was a moment where it was on that kind of pivot, and it could have swung either way. And I really feel like we're in a similar place here. I'm hoping, of course, that there's still a run of reasonably easy games coming up, and they can actually pile up some victories and have a kind of similar script to last year. But I'm not sure. I think it's going to be really interesting to watch play out. And of course, that's all going to depend on our good friend Cooper Rush. What are your thoughts about Cooper Rush? Is he the guy who's capable of engineering some close victories? Does he have something in him, or is this just a small sample size and he's inevitably going to come back to earth? And he's ultimately the kind of guy who's going to go 2-6 in his first 8 starts.
Well, I think yes to most of that. I think a couple things that stand out to me is, first off, Cooper Rush is, I mean, he's really nothing more or less than what he should be. I think that there's, I mean, maybe some of us, and I will include myself here, that doubt him a little more. Like we always think he's going to lose the backup job in training camp into somebody, and then he doesn't, and we're a little bit surprised by it. But then he comes in and he plays fine when he's called upon. And I think that's what we'll see. You're right. It is a small sample size. So I think we're going that as that sample size gets bigger, we're going to see those times where Cooper Rush plays like the little less adequate as a backup quarterback, and it will prove costly. But I think that we'll also see him play similar to what he's done. And I do think the Cowboys themselves will probably develop better. I think this defense is legit. If there's any reason to be excited this year for the Cowboys, it's the fact that I think they got a great defense, and I think that great defense is, you know, can travel. And I think that when they get things situated offense, that then they have the opportunity to be a great team. So really, we're just in kind of like survival mode. We just want to try to escape with wins, you know, until we get things going. But I do think the offense is going to improve. You know, I've already gone on record saying that I think the offensive line is better than I thought, and they're showing that they're playing well. And I think there's a lot of pieces there to give this team a shot. So I think 2-6 Cooper Rush type thing is, I mean, I'd be surprised if the bottom just fell out, but I do think that he's still going to just be mediocre, and that's going to be both a good thing and a bad thing depending on just how everyone else plays. But we have to give him credit that is, because he was, if we had that type of play in week one, the Cowboys had a chance to win that game. And I think people aren't talking about this enough, that Prescott would just had one of his worst games, and he just did not look right. And the throws he was making was terrible. Everyone wants to blame play calling or just the front office just didn't do enough for him. But then you have Cooper Rush come out there, and look what happens when people are actually executing and making and putting the ball where it should be. So, and I'm not at all saying that, well, you know, maybe Cooper should be, or that's just completely silly and ridiculous, and I will not entertain any thought of that. But Cooper did play well in week two. Dak Prescott did not week one, and that does make a big difference.
Yeah, two comments in response to that. I think the other thing that people are not giving enough credit, or the other thing that to which people are not giving enough credit, is the Tampa Bay defense, which is actually really good. And so I think people thought, like, last year we were able to score almost 30 points on Tampa Bay's defense, so that's how it should go. I actually think this may be the best defense in the league. They're really good, and New Orleans had a lot of trouble. The Cowboys had a lot of trouble. There's a reason that the receivers didn't get open against Tampa, and part of it's the scheme, part of it's the receivers, but a big part of it is the Tampa Bay corners. They're really tough, and they're very sticky. And their secondary is talented and smart and has a really good scheme. They're very sound. The other thing, though, is that, and this is something that that you gestured toward when you're talking about the Cowboys offensive line being better. You know, one of the things that I've been saying during this offseason when everybody's been moaning about the Cowboys getting rid of Lael Collins is that they made a bet on an ascending player and jettisoned a descending player because they didn't want him to be a progress stopper. And even when you do that, you always risk the present being not as good, but knowing that the future will be better, right? You take your lumps in the present, knowing that you'll have a better future, both because your guy will get better, but also because the other guy's inevitably going to get worse. I think, I know Lael Collins was going up against Micah Parsons. I know, but I also just think he looked off balance, stiff. He's a shell of what he used to be. And I think he's a shell of what Cowboy fans have been clamoring or about who he is. All off season. And so I felt like the game against the Bengals was a real vindication for the Cowboys' choice to go ahead and give Terrence Steele his reps, let him take his lumps and get better, because he was, I thought, quite clearly the better right tackle on the field.
Yeah,
last Sunday.
Well, absolutely. You're absolutely right. It was, I mean, and you're right. We don't want to be too hard on LC because he had his hands full for sure. But you saw one of the better games from Terrence Steele. Terrence Steele to me, and I've been an advocate of Terrence Steele, and I'm not overly concerned about comparing between the two. I don't really care about it. All I know is that Terrence Steele is a good player, and you know, if you're looking at the price and stuff, it's a no-brainer to me. So I don't have any issues with it. He's still young, he's still developing. But if you go and watch that tape against the Cincy, and you know, you will see Terrence Steele. It was absolutely the right choice, you know, for that the Cowboys made. And the whole offensive line just looked really good. And I mean, mm-hmm. I was just very impressed with everybody. Even Matt Farniak was making plays, and he improved from game one to game two. And so,
but how could that be? I thought Joe Philbin didn't know how to coach.
Oh, I tell you what, it's just a roller coaster with motions with that guy, because sometimes he's a bad coach and sometimes he's a good coach. I don't get it, Raps, but I tell you what, I mean, if this offensive line continues with the players, these young players like this, we just got to own it and just say, you know, he knows what he's doing. Cause yeah, they looked really sharp, and that's a lot. I mean, Zach Martin and four youngsters basically is what you mm-hmm. deal with. Mm-hmm. And for them to be able to work collectively as well as they did, that's very impressive. So, I mean, I know there's going to be some growing pains, and we see a little bit of that, but those guys, I mean, this is week two, and the way where they're at right now, that's really promising. So I'm pretty pleased with that.
Grandpa Zach and the Diaper Dandies.
I like it. Grandpa Zach and Diaper Dandies. Anyway, that is all we have for our show today. If you haven't yet, please do subscribe to the Blogging Boys Podcast Network. Leave us a rating, write a review wherever you get your podcast, Apple, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher. Tell us what you think. Anything you would like to see us do differently to improve your podcast listening experience. And if you ever want to talk to us about anything at all, Cowboys Hot Topics, you know, position, you know, who should be starting what, you know, or, you know, what's your favorite Cowboys-Giants primetime game? Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at DannyFantom24, and Rabs is at Rabble Rouser, spelled RABBLEROUSR. And don't forget to check out all the great podcasts throughout the entire week. Every day we got something new for you. Tomorrow we'll have the World's Team with Meg Murray and Paul Stewart, so make sure to check that out. But that's all we have for today. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hope you have a great weekend. Stay safe, stay happy, stay true to the silver and blue, and we will catch you later.
Fill out those permission trips for our field trip to New York, students.
Woohoo!